The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast. Presentations and interviews with leading attorneys and industry professionals. On this edition, Jonas Kopanen of Linklaters in Brussels. On horizontal and vertical agreements in European competition and antitrust law. The opinions expressed by guests interviewed on LexisNexis legal podcasts do not necessarily reflect those of Reed Elsevier Incorporated, LexisNexis, subsidiary companies, shareholders, employees, or customers, and should not be considered legal advice. Jonas Kopanen is a partner with Linklaters in Brussels. Mr. Kopanen is an advocate member of the Swedish Bar, who obtained LLM degrees from the universities of Lund and Maastricht. He has considerable experience in complex matters involving EU law, antitrust and merger control, and their application before EU institutions, as well as national authorities and courts. He acts for leading clients in several industry sectors, such as pharmaceuticals, financial services, software, information technology, basic industries, and beverages. Mr. Kopanen has lectured and published extensively on topics of EU law and international and domestic antitrust and merger control law. He's a non-governmental advisor to the European Commission with respect to the International Competition Network and has, in that capacity, assisted the ICN Working Party on merger control notification and procedures on the drafting of recommended practices. Mr. Kopanen is the author of the European Union chapter in the publication European Competition Laws, available from LexisNexis. Mr. Kopanen joins us now from Brussels. It's great to have you with us on this LexisNexis legal podcast.
I'm delighted to be invited to discuss European competition law with you and also with the people who will be listening to this podcast.
Well, in late 2010, the European Commission revised its rules for the assessment of cooperation agreements between competitors, so-called horizontal cooperation agreements. If you would, explain what a horizontal agreement is with regard to competition and antitrust law, and then what a vertical agreement is.
Yeah. Generally speaking, you would distinguish between vertical and horizontal agreements in antitrust law, and in particular in European competition law. And there you would look at horizontal agreements as agreements between two players or more than two players that are active at the same level of an industry. Typically, we think of these companies as direct competitors or potential competitors. A vertical agreement is an agreement that has been entered into between players that are active at different levels of an industry. Typically, one will think about, for instance, a manufacturer and the manufacturer's distributor. Both categories of agreement give rise to competition concerns in certain specific circumstances.
If you could, just to bring us up to speed, can you talk about some of these major revisions that were made by the European Commission related to horizontal cooperation agreements?
Yeah. And before I get into that, maybe just a few words about the regime for control of potentially anti-competitive agreements in Europe. The basic prohibition against agreements that have the effect or object to restrict competition is found in Article 101 of the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union. That provision contains, on the one hand, a prohibition, and on the other hand, an exemption from the prohibition, which applies in certain circumstances. Now, this basic treaty provision applies universally, but in addition, the European Commission has issued instruments that are referred to as block exemption regulations. And there exists a number of different block exemption regulations which applies to different categories of agreements and also some that applies to industry sectors. And the reform that has taken effect recently concerned block exemption regulations for specialization agreements, and R&D agreements, for instance, that are entered into between competitors or potential competitors. In addition to the block exemption regulations, the Commission has also issued guidance in the form of a what it calls horizontal agreement guidelines. Now, the guidelines, they apply to horizontal cooperation agreements generally, but it contains also specific explanations of what different provisions in the block exemption regulations mean in practice. That is a fairly long and comprehensive document which both sets out the overall framework for analysis of these types of agreements and also specific guidance on different classes of agreements. And the reform process, I dare say, was directed at both finding new block exemption regulations, but also to reform and update the analytical framework for the analysis of horizontal agreements. And why is this an important process? And why is it important to find rules that are adequately calibrated in this context? Well, horizontal agreements conceptually covers a very broad range of classes of collaboration. Some of these collaborations are the most severe forms of anti-competitive agreements. The hardcore cartels of price fixing, of volume reduction, of market sharing that certain competitors enter into. And this is indeed one of the main focus areas of the European Commission, is to enforce the competition rules against such hardcore cartels and impose very severe sanctions. I'm sure that you have also heard about the almost staggering amount of fines that are imposed in those type of cases. Now, on the other hand, there is also fully legitimate and welfare-improving forms of collaboration between competitors. R&D collaboration in many instances lead to improved and new products that are brought to market by competitors and improve the lives of all of us. Standardization agreements can be important in implementing and adopting new standards in the technology area. And the issue that the guidelines and the new block exemption aims to address is to help companies find the red line in the sand, if you will, when something is prohibited and when something is permitted. Now, I say this as a general objective, but as anyone knows who have looked into assessing the lawfulness of these type of collaborations know, this is sometimes a very difficult call to make. And it is in making those calls that the Commission's new package serve as an aid in many respects.
Expand, if you would, on how vertical and or horizontal agreements violate the competition rules and law.
The simplest form can be when a large number of competitors come together in what is often referred to as a smoke-filled room, and they agree on market allocation or price fixing. That is the simplest form of anti-competitive collaboration. These are the hardcore cartels. But there are, as I also said, R&D collaboration, for instance, which is something that is where the collaboration is not aimed at reducing output or at increasing prices of the output, but rather at finding ways to bring new and improved products to market. And it is also often uncertain whether the collaboration will indeed result in a new product that can be brought to market. It's an important element of risk involved in R&D collaboration, and also an element of risk sharing. And in order for that type of collaboration to happen, it's important that antitrust authorities recognize that there are benefits to a certain type of competitor collaboration. So
there really is kind of a special nature of horizontal agreements within research and development.
Yes. I mean, and here, I'm speaking here about two very, very different forms of collaboration between competitors. You find it almost at the at different sides of a broad spectrum. But still, there can be certain types of R&D collaboration, which could also function as a covert form of cartel collaboration. And the block exemption and the horizontal guidelines give examples which help companies determine whether the collaboration that they are planning to enter into are at risk of being viewed as such by the European Commission.
You mentioned sanctions earlier. Is that the primary way that the Commission or Competition Authority handles vertical or horizontal agreements that violate the rules?
That's indeed the case. The European Commission's enforcement powers falls broadly into three categories. The Commission can prohibit or issue a cease and desist order. It can impose sanctions or remedies that order companies to behave in a particular way, or it can impose fines. And the threat of fines in particular has become very palpable in recent years, where the Commission has really upped the ante and imposes fines every year in excess of 1 billion euros in total. This is, of course, split between several different cases and between several different companies. But when you look at it both in aggregate and in individual cases, the amount of fines become very severe. And the most severe sanctions are indeed in the cartel area, but also agreements which have been entered into between players active at different levels of an industry, so-called vertical agreements, can attract severe fines in certain instances.
Do you see one type of agreement as more or less threatening or menacing to competition law than the other?
I think typically horizontal agreements do involve the greatest risk, but it is the one particular class of agreements which fall outside the scope of the Commission's the horizontal package that we talked about earlier that poses that risk. If you think about the vertical agreements, the greatest risks that can arise in those relationships are risks that competitors are excluded from the market, whereas, broadly speaking, you can say that risks associated with horizontal agreements can result in direct welfare losses for customers and consumers, as well as exclusionary effects of the type that sometimes vertical agreements also give rise to.
You've been a presenter at a number of competition and antitrust conferences on horizontal agreements. What sense do you get from participants at these conferences as far as these revisions are concerned?
Yeah. If we think about what has happened and been discussed a great deal in Europe and in the past year in particular, has been specific aspects of the Commission's reform program for horizontal agreements. We should perhaps say that this reform program was implemented in respect of a set of rules that had been in place for nearly 10 years, and that set of rules was in itself a great leap forward in that the Commission moved away from its traditional approach to horizontal agreements, which was rather formalistic, and the Commission tried to identify what are the situations where horizontal agreements give rise to anti-competitive effects, as opposed to the form of different types of horizontal agreements. Now, the decade during which that program was in place was important in that it really sharpened the minds of practitioners and of companies to identifying anti-competitive effects arising in horizontal agreements. The reform program, which has now taken effect, involved a number of tweaks to that to the Commission's first horizontal package. And the reform process attracted a great deal of interest from industry and from the practitioner community, and also a great level of engagement on the part of the Commission. And the areas which perhaps was mostly of interest to people commenting on the new set of rules had to do with, for instance, the Commission's approach to so-called information exchanges. Information exchanges which are not necessarily part of a cartel, but still involve exchange of commercially sensitive information. That is one area that people were very keen to help the Commission strike the right balance between what is problematic in this context and what is efficiency enhancing and welfare improvement. Another area which attracted a great deal of interest was the approach to standardization agreements. These are agreements or processes between players in an industry to establish common standards which are used in the development of products, and these products then compete with one another in the marketplace. A very widely dispersed standard that can be used as an example is GSM telephony. GSM is a standard developed by a standard body. As we know, many different companies develop and manufacture handset devices that are complying with those standards and that can communicate with one another, even though they are manufactured by different companies and are sold in competition with one another in the marketplace. On the back of some enforcement cases that the Commission pursued in recent years, the Commission included in the new horizontal guidelines a chapter which sets out the Commission's views on when these type of agreements can be anti-competitive and in violation with European competition law. And in addition to that, also more technical changes to the block exemption regulations on research and development and specialization and joint production agreements, which had already been in place for a period of 10 years or so. So these are some of the themes that were discussed a great deal in the as part of the reform process, and have also been of interest to companies and other stakeholders at the conference circuit.
You mentioned practitioners. In conclusion, do you have any practice tips for practitioners and attorneys who are dealing with these agreements, with these revisions. There's just so much to consider here.
Yeah, I think that one of the first good questions to ask oneself and also to ask clients is, you know, why are these agreements entered into? What is the objective of the parties that intend to conclude an agreement or establish a certain joint practice in the marketplace? Are the purposes to increase efficiency, or are their purposes to restrict competition or restrict output or control price? If you look at why the companies intend to enter into agreements, you get a good first sense of whether the arrangement may or may not be of risk. Of course, there's a great deal more that needs to be factored in, but I think it's a good first question to ask oneself and also clients. And in that context, it's also worth bearing in mind that competition authorities, if they ever come to scrutinize the agreement or arrangement, they are also interested in exactly these questions and may be asking for documents that were prepared in contemplation of the agreement as part of their reviews of whether something is anti-competitive or not, using the evidence-gathering powers that competition authorities have.
Any final thoughts that you'd like to leave listeners with today as far as horizontal and vertical agreements go regarding antitrust and competition law?
That could have us discussing for another hour or so. but I think one aspect to bear in mind here is that although the principles of antitrust are common these days to many countries and many jurisdictions around the world, if you are someone who is doing business in many countries, it is worth bearing in mind that there are still important differences in the enforcement practice, in the interpretation of the rules, and how they are applied. So the fact that you have a good understanding of how the rules are applied in your home jurisdiction doesn't necessarily give you full comfort that you operate in compliance with the laws in the other countries where you conduct business. So I think it's well worth taking the time and making the effort to ensure that your business practices and your agreements are not only in compliance but also valid and enforceable in the territories where you do business, where you generate revenue, wherever that is.
Well, Mr. Copeland, I want to thank you very much for a fascinating discussion and for calling in from where you are in Brussels. Appreciate your time very much, and thank you for being part of our LexisNexis Legal Podcast.
I'm delighted to have had this discussion with you and look forward to other discussions on other occasions. Thank you.
Jonas Kopanen of Linkletters in Brussels. Thank you for listening to this LexisNexis Legal Podcast. Visit the LexisNexis communities at www.lexisnexis.com/community. The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast, copyright 2011 by LexisNexis, a division of Reed Elsevier Incorporated. I'm Steve Bursler. Thank you for listening.